Good morning. This is the KUNM Collins Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Thanks so much for joining us. Today on the show, contextualizing the sequester. Have we as a nation been here before? How is the sequester going to affect New Mexico? And how does that compare with effects on other states? What industries are most vulnerable? And are there any lights at the end of the tunnel? We'd like to hear from you about your experience with the automatic federal budget cuts that went into effect on Friday, March 1st. Some will have immediate impact. Some may take more time to be felt. Are you a business owner? Are you worried about keeping your company afloat? Are you a federal employee? Or do you contract with the feds? Do you have any information about your job security? We'd like to hear from you today. Email callinshow@kunm.org. You can post your comments online or call in live. The numbers are 277-5866 or toll-free 877-899-5866. Joining us today to help us wrap our brains around this is Marilyn G. Wax. She is NPR's senior business editor. Good morning, Marilyn.
Hi, Elaine. Nice to join you today.
Thanks. So let's take a few minutes first to remember how we got to this point where these automatic across-the-board federal budget cuts are being implemented as we speak. Wasn't the sequester supposed to be such a dire threat that it would never happen?
Boy, this has just been such a wacky time with this whole process. You know, the rest of the country is looking forward to basketball March Madness. Here in Washington, we have our very own version of March Madness. This has really been a crazy week, even by Washington standards. Let me just roll it back and sort of start at the beginning of how did we get here. This process called sequestration began back in the summer of 2011 when Congress was trying to come up with a budget deal to cut deficit spending. They were unable to do that. They said, okay, we'll put a gun to our own heads. If we can't think of something, we will have these across-the-board painful cuts that will kick in January 1st of this year.
But it was expected that they wouldn't have to pull the trigger, right?
They thought they would never really get there because this would just be too crazy for anyone to do. So this brings us to the end of last year in December of 2012. This deadline was looming for January 1st. And Congress decided to take up a different issue. They were also dealing with the expiration of the Bush-era tax cuts. So they got so caught up in taking care of that in December that they sort of came to the conclusion they just didn't have the bandwidth to do too many problems at once. So they came to a conclusion on the tax situation, and they pushed the sequestration process to March 1st, saying they would give themselves January and February to sort it out. Well, January came, February went, it got to March 1st, and the process had to kick in. And let me just say something about this word. It's such a strange word to use, sequestration, but think of it this way. It's really a word that means that you have the legal ability to set something aside. So, for example, a judge might sequester a jury, and that is, he tells them, now you must go to this hotel and order all the breakfast you want, but you have to stay in the hotel until this trial is over. He has not kidnapped them. He's not going to be charged with false imprisonment. He had the legal right to sequester the jury. So what Congress has is the legal right to sequester, that is, set aside money that otherwise was already authorized and was supposed to be spent. Now, the government works on a fiscal year that starts on October 1st, so we're already halfway through this fiscal year of 2013. And because they had pushed this sequestration deadline to March 1st, that means you're going to have an even bigger impact because it's more condensed. We've got to get through all of these spending cuts before September 30th. So that's where we were last week. All of a sudden, we found ourselves with these very large budget cuts coming. Really, it's a long story, but it's supposed to be half are directed at defense spending, the other half at all other sorts of discretionary spending. Social Security and Medicare are not included in this.
So that's what I wanted to ask. Let's get that list of programs and departments that are, I think you used the word held harmless.
Right. They didn't want to include. It's just so controversial to include Social Security, and you can't, you know, I mean, my mom lives on Social Security. Her rent comes every month. If you suddenly cut her Social Security, it would be catastrophic. So you can't really do that. So I think what they wanted to do was find ways to inflict a certain amount of political pain. So they kept the senior citizens out of it, but they did go after all of these government programs that would be have to be cut across the board. And that's where we were as of last Friday, with a lot of predictions of a lot of pain to come. They sent out, the reason you haven't maybe felt it yet is because a lot of this depends on sending out notices to workers. They have the right to get a 30-day notice before they get furloughed or laid off. So those furlough notices are going out this week, and the real pain won't kick in until April.
Of the areas that are facing cuts nationally, and I'm talking about areas of the economy, can you talk about the certain industries and segments of the economy that are expected to feel the cuts more?
Yes, because they're concentrated in the military, they really will be felt a lot by civilian defense workers. And keep in mind that these civilian defense workers, about 40% are veterans. So you're talking about people who have maybe come home from the war, got a job, finally trying to get their lives put back together, and now they're opening the mail and there's a furlough notice. In New Mexico alone, we've got about 7,000 workers, the civilian defense workers, who will be affected by that. So what these furloughs mean for those people, right now it looks like every week they will have to take a day off without pay, which is pretty painful. I mean, if you think about cutting your income by 20%, yes, it's nice to get Friday off, but it's not so nice to get to the end of the month and find you have 20% less pay to keep your household going.
I'm thinking about our previous governor, Governor Bill Richardson, who at one point did have to institute some furloughs for state workers, and those furloughs were, I think it was 3 days in the entire year of furlough. So this is much more significant.
Much more dramatic. And then there's also all sorts of other things. I mean, there are federal cuts that will hit. New Mexico is actually one of the states that will be among the hardest hit on a percentage basis. I mean, of course, it's a much smaller state than California or New York, but pound for pound, New Mexico will actually take quite a hit. It really puts at risk funding for teachers, teachers' aid, Head Start programs, work-study programs. There are a lot of people who will feel either actually have their jobs cut or will at least have these kinds of furloughs. But there's something else. I was looking up some statistics about New Mexico, and you guys get a lot of federal funding for research for various institutions, businesses in your area, a lot of high-tech things. And I looked at just the NIH budget alone. That's the National Institutes for Health, which sends out grants. And there were almost, in fiscal 2012, the state of New Mexico got almost $95 million just for medical research. Well, you know, if your state economy is trying to recover from the Great Recession, you certainly wouldn't want to lose $95 million worth of federal funds for medical research that employs graduate students and scientists and people that you want to keep in your state. So if you start having furloughed civilian defense workers and you start to see cuts in federal grants for research, that can have a real impact on your community.
We've posted a visual aid on this question of which states will be affected most by the sequester. You can go to KUNM.org. There's a segment of the image on our homepage. And then when you click through to the post for this show, there's a link to the report, sequestration, which states are most vulnerable. And that report says that New Mexico has 12.9% of the total state economy is it high risk of or the state is at high risk. It's 12.8% of the economy that it can be affected by these cuts.
But let me just say, now that I've depressed everybody, let me just turn to the optimistic side of this, because in keeping with our March Madness theme, I want to point out that this week things have started to change in Washington. That is, this announcement came on Friday that the president had signed, you know, the paperwork necessary to start to put this sequestration process into effect. But then all of a sudden everybody was like, yeah, really, what were we thinking with that? That's a little crazy. So this week, Congress is starting to figure out ways to maybe mitigate some of the pain from this. So what happened was yesterday, House Republicans approved a bill that would give the military more flexibility in terms of how it has to carry out these cuts.
Meaning they wouldn't have to do furloughs necessarily.
Yes. Think about it this way. If you had a budget and somebody said your family has to cut 5% of your spending, well, a 5% across the board might be kind of crazy because that means you would have to mail in your mortgage check and you would short it by 5%, which I'm sure the lender would notice. Mm-hmm. And then you go to make your car payment and you short that by 5%. And I'll bet your lender would notice. But you keep doing everything exactly the same. You buy the same number of, shoes. You buy the same number of hot dogs, everything. But you just cut it all by 5%. Well, that's kind of crazy. You might really just sit down and say, wait a minute, we really need to pay the mortgage. We're going to pay that in full.
And let's cut the hot dogs.
Right. Let's just maybe cut back a little bit on instead of we're going to make sure that we have the car. We're going to make sure we pay the kids' doctor bills and we're going to make sure that the house is in good shape. But this year we're not going to go on vacation. Or let's take a look at that cable bill. We've got to drop HBO and Showtime because we've got to trim out of there. You would do things that make sense for your household and don't threaten basic things like your shelter and your car. So what they want to do is give these government agencies the flexibility to make more reasonable choices about maybe we'll finish up a project instead of starting a new one. That maybe that's the way to go is just to finish up what we've already got going and not start this new project instead of cutting everything 5% across the board. So where we are with that, now the House has passed it. The Senate needs to take it up. The Democrats are not crazy about the way this is written because it does a couple of things. For one, it sort of re-ups sequestration. It says, yes, we are going to go forward with these budget cuts, but with more flexibility. But the problem is they also want to have more flexibility for everyone. They're saying, wait a minute, why is it that
why
the military
the
gets to have?
Department? Yeah.
I mean, maybe if you have one of those NIH grants, the health grants, you might have a project that you've been doing an experiment that's gone on for years and you're almost at the end and you have the answer and you're just dying to finish up your work, but you have to cut your budget. Well, can the NIH have the flexibility to say, no, go ahead, finish that research, but we won't start this new project. We'll cut the budget, but we're going to do it in a way that doesn't harm what the taxpayers have already paid for.
Which kind of takes the across the board out of it in a sense.
Right. It would so that's where it locks in the cuts, but it takes away sort of the Mad Hatter parts of it where you have to, just do it across the board. And it's a question now whether or not the Democrats will be able to get that passed, that the flexibility goes to all agencies, or at least certainly some key ones like the Justice Department, so that you don't have to cut 1,000 FBI agents as it might have to happen under the sequestration as it's structured now. So we'll see how that plays out. They still have a little while to sort of put this all together before they take their Easter break and before the furloughs really kick in. Remember I said there's sort of that 30-day fuse that's been lit. They've sent out the furlough notices, but they haven't started to take effect yet. So they've got a little leeway here to make sequestration less painful before it really fully hits the economy.
Folks, we'd like to hear from you today about your concerns about how the sequester may affect your family, your business. Perhaps you contract with one of the national labs here in New Mexico. We'd like to hear from you about what the impacts of the sequester are so far for you. Do you know? Have you been told? Or what are you worried is going to happen? The number to call locally here in Albuquerque is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can post your comments online at KUNM.org. You can also shoot us an email. The email address is callinshow@KUNM.org. We're speaking with Marilyn Giewax. She is NPR's senior business editor. And we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Summer Prep offers more than 90 academic arts, sports, and outdoor classes for K through 12, including Mandarin, mathematics, science, musical theater, and all-day camps for young children. Visit sandiaprep.org. This message sponsored by Sandia Prep School, a tax-exempt organization. KUNM programming is supported by the law firm of Rothstein, Donatelli, Hughes, Dahlstrom, Schoenberg, and Bienvenue, with offices in Santa Fe, Albuquerque, and Phoenix since 1976. For information, rothsteinlaw.com.
This is the KUNM Collins Show, and we're working on contextualizing the sequester, the automatic federal budget cuts that went into effect on Friday, March 1st. I'm Elaine Baumgartel, and Marilyn Giewax from NPR's business desk has joined us to discuss this. And first, we have an email from Karen this morning, and she writes, "My husband is a senior scientist at the Air Force Research Lab, where he's been employed since the 80s. With the sequester, he will lose about one quarter of his take-home pay. We have stopped dining out and we'll stop all discretionary spending we possibly can to try to make up the difference in income. We hope to avoid cutting out our children's club activities and lessons, which would impact the owners of these businesses if we did. Most of our spending is at locally owned businesses, and we hope they are not too adversely affected by these cuts." That's an email from Karen. Marilyn, this email kind of exposes the way that the cuts to employees' salaries or the furloughs is just kind of the initial wave of impact from the sequester.
That's the thing that economists measure, is how much of a ripple effect is there out after these job changes take effect. So the person may not be losing their job entirely, but if they are getting one of these dramatic pay cuts, you're going to pull back. You're going to do less with, you know, in terms of eating out, buying clothes, whatever. There goes the home remodeling you may have been planning this spring. So economists have taken all of that into account. And there's really a pretty broad consensus that what we're talking about here is probably a half of a percentage point of economic growth. And what that means, a half of a percentage point may not sound like a huge amount, but it really has a pretty big impact on people's lives. That is, instead of growing at 3%, the economy, which would be pretty robust, maybe the economy will grow at only 2.5%, which is a lot more modest. And what that translates into is about 750,000 jobs lost. So
that's nationally,
you know,
right?
Yes, nationally. Yeah. So you're talking about, at a time when we've already got 12 million people looking for work, do you really want to add another 750,000 people into that pile of people looking for work? That's not good for wages. That's not good for the people who are long-term unemployed, having more people join them in the unemployment line. That's pretty negative. But there's also something else to worry about here, which is sort of these economic choke points that might come along. That is, let's say if you're cutting meat inspectors, there are lots of people who have jobs that go into creating meat for my dinner. If I want to have a steak tonight, I need to have ranchers and farmers and truck drivers and butchers and all sorts of people working at a meatpacking plant to get all that, get something from being a calf into some big thing that has been grown and slaughtered and ready to go out and be shipped to the grocery store. But between all of those workers and my stomach stands an FDA meat inspector. That person has to be able to look at the meat and make sure that it's approved for being shipped out. And if that person is laid off, all that meat, all that effort that has gone into getting that product to that final point gets backed up. So do I go to the grocery store and say, I'd like to have a steak, but there isn't any here. Or maybe I have to pay more because there's a shortage of meat. So when we hit these choke points, which are tend to be things like the meat inspectors, the air traffic controllers, you have this whole elaborate aviation system all in place. But in the end, when I get to the airport, I need an air traffic controller to get me up and in the air.
There are three rural airports in New Mexico that are at risk of losing their towers. Santa Fe, yes. Hobbs and Roswell, I believe. Mm-hmm. They're smaller airports in the state, and the reporting that we've seen and done here at KUNM has said that it doesn't mean that the airport shuts down necessarily, but it does mean that airlines can choose whether or not to use that airport,
and it
does increase the chance for problems when there's nobody kind of directing the symphony. At the airport.
At a lot of these airports, what we see is that regional carriers will come in there, and especially in a lot of rural areas, that they're really important. But even not rural areas, I mean, Connecticut, for example, I was just looking at some of the airports that are threatened there, in New Haven and Hartford and Danford, and those are not rural areas. But if they lose their airport control towers, that's, that hurts them too. So I don't want to say it's just rural. But it's a lot of these smaller towns or secondary airports are real relievers for people. That is, you can go into this airport and you don't have to go to the great big, megapopolis type airport. A lot of people really enjoy flying in and out of those smaller airports, and it's good for small businesses. It's good for the community. But do you really want to send your very expensive plane and your very valuable passengers and crew into an airport that doesn't have a control tower?
Yeah.
So that could cause airlines to say, you know what, we just don't want this hassle. That's a little scary to us. We're going to withdraw that service.
Yeah. Let's go to the phone lines. We have Tim in Albuquerque. Good morning, Tim. You're on the air.
Good morning. I work for an agency that provides services to adults with developmental disabilities under New Mexico's DD waiver, which is heavily Medicaid funded. And I just wanted to find out from your guest what effects a sequester might have on Medicaid programs in New Mexico.
Marilyn?
Well, you know what? I can't drill down that carefully on a lot of things. Now, the White House has put out a list of what things are affected, and they have said in New Mexico that you would lose $6.1 million in funding for primary and secondary education, as well as cuts for the Head Start program. And there are other things that involve child care, vaccines, those kinds of things,
but as far as Medicaid itself, one of the programs that was
Medicaid,
held
yes,
harmless?
There are. That's one of the ones that's sort of on the set aside. The Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security entitlement kind of programs have been put on the side. So there may be, it's hard to say. Some of these federal funds kind of blend together.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't want to speak with great certainty about exactly what's going on in New Mexico, because sometimes you get federal funds that are blended with state and local funds, and there may be different mechanisms for his particular program. And I don't want to speak to that level of specific situation. But generally speaking, the Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security stuff is off the table.
Let's take another call. Chris in Albuquerque. Good morning, Chris. You're on the air. Chris, are you there? Looks like we might have lost Chris. Let's go to Judy in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. And maybe you can't answer this question either. Excuse me. Will it affect the bus system and the Sunvan here is my question.
So public transportation, Marilyn.
Well, the Department of Transportation is going to be making a lot of cuts that they have to do. Now, again, that's a pretty specific question, because there may be some federal grants from the Transportation Department that help your buses.
Yeah.
But,
like, does that federal money trickle down to our local bus service?
Right, to get to a particular bus stop. I'm here in Washington. I can't say for sure how your state has structured that. So I don't really want to go into such particulars, because I can't say for sure. But I do know that, generally speaking, the Transportation Secretary has been very concerned about these cuts, because the entire transportation system is stretched pretty thin. I mean, we've got a lot of issues out there with, it's not like there's too much air traffic control. In fact, recently we've had concerns about near collisions and, the things that maybe we should be funding a lot more for air traffic control. Certainly people who are stuck in traffic, bridges and roads that need to be expanded, fixed, public transportation systems. I think an awful lot of people would argue that we need more funding for all of that, and that any cuts would be felt. But, how New Mexico handles it, I can't say in the particular.
Yeah, New Mexico's economy is definitely heavily dependent on federal money, and You know, I'm thinking of the national labs, the military, federal lands, programs that serve New Mexico's poor and elderly. Of course, some of those programs, as we've discussed, are held harmless under the sequester.
You know, I do want to say one thing, though, that, like, for example, although you would be getting your Social Security check, there is a nutrition assistance program for seniors. And the White House said that that would be cut by more than $400,000. So there may be some seniors who are getting meals right now with help from the federal government who, while they'll continue to get their Social Security check, may have their hot meal taken.
Let's go to Philip on the line from Tijeras. Good morning, Philip. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning. I know it's a bit disconcerting to hear this litany of people who will be suffering because of the sequester. But if you look at it in the long term, won't the end result be better? Because the more people are harmed by these budget cuts, the more people will see how the policies of the Republicans to harm our nation and help their wealthy friends has brought economic pain to so many people across the country that in the next election, in a year and a half, the Democrats will be able to take back the House, and then we'll get some real good progressive legislation through. So in the final analysis, won't this trouble be worthwhile if it motivates people to have a more progressive body politic?
Marilyn, what do you think about that?
Well, I don't care to get into any kind of politics and opinions like that. NPR just tells it straight up the middle. So let me just say what different points of view are. Democrats would say, yes, exactly what this caller said, that by making these cuts, it will become more apparent to people that they need government, you know, things like, for example, fighting fires this summer. If there are lots of fires out west, people might be pretty upset if there aren't enough firefighting capabilities out there. Border patrol issues, there are lots of things that could have regional effects that will get people to think differently about how they see government spending. On the other hand, many Republicans believe that actually what people will end up seeing is that the stock market, for example, is doing better, that if we start to get government spending under control more and start to shrink some of the government programs, that we will have a healthier economy because there is less of a government role in the free market. So those are two opposing points of view. People can think what they want about it. You know, it really just depends on what light you want to see things in. But there are, you know, arguments on both sides that one says that the federal budget deficits, as they are structured now, are just unsustainable, and that in the long run, the pain from that will be greater, and that there needs to be these kinds of forced cuts for government to really start to rein in some of that spending.
We're taking your calls this morning. Are you a small business owner? Are you worried about keeping your company afloat? Do you have a lot of federal contractors or federal employees who are your clients? Are you a federal employee or do you contract with the feds, and do you have information about your job security? We'd like to hear from you today. You can call locally 277-5866. You can call toll free 877-899-5866. You can post your comments online, and you can also email us. That address is callinshow@kunm.org. We're speaking with Marilyn Giewax. She is NPR's senior business editor. And I wanted to return to one of the kind of images that you mentioned earlier, this idea of choke points, areas in mm-hmm. the economy where a tightening of the budget, where layoff of employees or furloughing of employees kind of tightens a place where there's a lot of traffic, causing right. some backup. And mm-hmm. you mentioned earlier the food inspection. Talk a little bit about transportation and what impacts we've seen already in other parts of the country.
You know, it's kind of dicey. It's sort of interesting. There are like these Twitter wars going on where people are sharing pictures through Facebook or other sharing mechanisms like Twitter, where you may go to an airport and the line is super long and you take a picture and say, wow, look, this is sequestration is already having an impact. And then other people will send out a picture and say, no, look, the airport is just fine. So there's sort of like
anecdotal
arguments. Yes, it's very anecdotal. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it was kind of interesting. I talked to this guy the other day from Salt Lake City. It was Monday morning, and he was a seasoned business traveler who has been to the airport many, many times. And he got there on a Monday morning, and it was pretty chaotic. He sent out the picture on his Facebook page. It was really crazy long lines, really, really long. And when he finally, he said usually it takes him maybe 15 minutes to get through security, and it ended up taking him an hour, and a lot of people were missing their flights. It was very frustrating. And the picture that he sent was, you know, pretty shocking as far as they had to actually turn off an escalator so that people could back up down the steps and around the, you know, building. And it was really something. So he said he talked to one of the TSA workers, one of the security checkpoints, and said, what's this all about? And was told by that person that there was overtime that had been denied to some workers, and since they didn't have enough people staying over, that on overtime, Monday morning got jammed up. So is that, maybe that's true. But other people said, no, you know, it was Monday morning. It just happened to be a really good ski weekend in Utah, and it was just extra busy because there were a lot of people who were skiing, and it had nothing to do with TSA. It just was one of those coincidences. How do you sort that out? What's really true? In this person's mind, he was told by the TSA guy that that's what was the problem. But maybe that was just a worker being sarcastic. Maybe that was somebody just letting off steam. It's hard to say. It's very tough to sort out in these, as everybody starts tweeting these different pictures. There's been pictures from that I've seen from O'Hare, from Miami, places where people say, look, it's already having an effect. And others say, no, look at the data. Actually, that's just a run-of-the-mill slowdown, that it was a busy morning. So we'll see. You know, it's kind of interesting. It's how social media sort of puts reporters everywhere, because now that everybody's got a cell phone that they can snap a picture with, I think we'll have a better read as we go forward with this, as everybody starts to report on. Mm-hmm. We've got airports full of, in effect, local reporters to tell us what's happening.
Let's take another call. CR in Albuquerque. Good morning, CR. You're on the air.
Hey, yeah, good morning. I just tuned in. I haven't listened to the whole program, but a fellow called in, like maybe the last caller or so, talking about how wonderful it'll be for the Democrats to get into power and have the progressive policies put into place and so forth. I'm coming from the other end of the spectrum. I have children and grandchildren, and I think it's just horribly irresponsible the way that we are borrowing money and spending it to, you know, support our generation and our parents' generation through Social Security, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, we're going to expect our kids to pay for it. And I think that is so wrong that I don't care who put the sequester in place. I think it's a good thing. Anything to force our government to spend less, borrow less, that's what we need to do. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, CR. Let's go to Nat in Santa Fe. Good morning, Nat. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm going to try and stay organized about this. I'm a person with a disability, and I'm a disability advocate. And the National Council on Disability has pointed out some effects that are going to probably take place by this. In mandatory programs like temporary assistance for needy families and SNAP, like food stamps, they won't be cut, but the staff time and resources are likely to be compromised. Although Medicare cuts are facing an 8.4% cuts, Medicare is limited to 2% in the fiscal year, but the Congressional Budget Office estimates that there'll be a 2% cut of $123 billion. And then in Social Security, pending disability claims will rise by probably about 140,000 claims, and applicants will have to wait longer for decisions on disability claims. and nearly a month longer for disability hearing decisions, and housing rental assistance for low-income rural people, mostly single women, will be eliminated as a result of cuts to the Department of Agriculture. Special education funding could be cut by about $978 million, affecting 30.7 million special education students. The IDEA, or Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, would be reduced by about 28%. Special education teachers might lose their jobs, about 15,000. 70,000 children would be dropped from Head Start programs.
These are national numbers, right, Nat?
Yeah. Voc Rehab would stand to lose about $160 million, leading to reduction of services, increasing the wait times. And for veterans, programs such as TRICARE, tuition assistance, and family support programs are not exempt and don't fall under it. And although there are no direct direct cuts to Veterans Administration health care programs, individuals that are forced to turn to the VA to obtain care they normally receive under TRICARE could add increased burdens to the system. So the bottom line would be the sequester could place tens of thousands of Americans with disabilities at greater risk for hunger and homelessness, endanger the education of millions of children with disabilities, and delay employment services and disability benefits for people with disabilities, including disabled veterans, who are pretty much on average already at greater risk of poverty. So those are some comments that I have that are related to the NCD's reports on this. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Nat. Marilyn, did you have a comment?
You know, just pointing out again that it's possible that this can be averted to some degree, but if Congress in the next couple of days, weeks, does reach some agreement about keeping sequestration in place, but giving the agencies more flexibility in how it would be put into place. And I have to think that's somewhat likely to pass. I mean, There's just a lot of unpopularity about the sequestration, and if they could come up with a compromise that would allow them to give the agencies more flexibility about how this will hit, I think that probably that's going to happen in coming days and weeks. And one other thing that I think we should all be aware of, another weird thing that happens in March here in our wacky capital, is the budget every year, remember I said that they work on a fiscal year that begins on October 1st. Well, Congress has been unable to reach a budget agreement for years now. They really never do agree on a budget. They argue about it and then nothing ever really kind of happens. So what they do is pass something called a continuing resolution, where they just continue the existing budget and sort of amend it, but they never come up with a whole new blueprint for spending and taxing. So the current CR, one of these continuing resolutions, when they passed it last fall, it was just before the election. Remember, back in September, everybody was talking about the presidential election, the new congressional election, so no one really wanted to deal with the budget for sure. So they passed a six-month continuing resolution that expires March 27th. And when that expires, unless they continue it, unless they pass another CR that would get you through the remaining 6 months, the government would actually shut down. Now, nobody seems to really want to play that game. This is not likely to happen. Remember, we had government shutdowns when President Clinton was in office. In 95 and 1996, there were this same situation came up, and it didn't play out well politically for Republicans. They ended up, a lot of people were pretty mad about having the government shut down, and it really wasn't to their political advantage. So Republicans are not eager to do that again, and Democrats definitely don't want to do it. So probably there'll be some kind of a combined thing that will ultimately get done here, where they come up with another continuing resolution to extend this year's spending authority to get us through the end of this fiscal year, to take us through September. And as part of that, it would also sort of make some of these patches to sequestration to make it less painful.
Marilyn,
but, you know, it's not settled yet.
Yeah. Marilyn Giewax is senior business editor with NPR. We're talking about sequestration nationally and here in New Mexico. And we're also taking your calls on your concerns or knowledge about how sequestration is or may affect you or your family or your business. Let's go to the phones now. Steve in Santa Fe. Good morning, Steve. You're on the air.
Good morning. I had a comment. You were asking for comments from business people. I have a business here in New Mexico, not directly working with the federal government, but there is concern in the business community about the ripple effects as they play through the system. I had a question, though, from Marilyn. The sequestration, I think you might have started to answer it. The sequestration is across the board on an agency mm-hmm. perspective, but jurisdiction or discretion, I should say, do the heads of the agencies have in applying these to their own agencies? And, you know, I'll self-identify here. I'm a Democrat. I voted for the Democrats, worked strongly to get them reelected. But it's appalling the amount of waste that you see in news articles and on TV, you know, weapon systems that the Pentagon doesn't want that are billions of dollars that, you know, for cronyism or whatever. 10,000 vacant government buildings that have been vacant in some cases since the Nixon administration, so going across many administrations. The report I said the biggest agency with vacant buildings was Veterans Administration. You know, what does a vacant building do for America's veterans except, you know, mm-hmm. put a ball and chain around their programs and make them less effective? So, you know, there are massive cuts that are needed to be made because, as another caller said, we cannot keep borrowing money. This is not sustainable. It's going to come to an end, and it could come to an end abruptly when our debt service doesn't get any takers, or somebody says suddenly, we're not going to take your debt at 2% interest or 1% interest. We want 7%. And then that's going to be a ripple instantly through the economy that's going to cause massive problems. So any discretion with the bureaucrats in terms of controlling it?
That's exactly the problem that they're facing right now is the way sequestration is written now. No, they don't have a lot of discretion. It's pretty much across the board cuts where every category has to take a cut, regardless of how needed or unneeded it is. And that's why there's this discussion. As I say, the Republicans have passed legislation just yesterday that would allow the military to have much more discretion so that they can make sensible cuts instead of just across the board. Democrats in the Senate are now taking up that same legislation, but they want to extend that discretion to all agencies and say that everybody should have a little bit more flexibility here in terms of how to enforce those cuts. Now, whether or not Congress can get this deal done and provide those agencies with more spending flexibility, it remains to be seen in the next couple of weeks. But it's probably more likely than not that they will come up with some way to add a little bit more flexibility to this.
We are taking your calls this morning. Our lines are full. If you do receive a busy signal, you can always send an email to callinshow@kunm.org. You can post your comments online or, of course, just after you hear somebody give their comment. That usually means that a line has become available. And let's go to Caroline in Albuquerque. Good morning, Caroline.
Good morning. I'm calling about the Iraq War. I heard yesterday that it's cost us $60 billion over the last 10 years. And, I'm a little confused about, like, bills that we have to pay that, you know, we've incurred over, say, the last 10 years. And, how do people who want to shrink the size of government to be so small that it can be drowned in a bathtub, how do they feel about paying for the wars that they started? Is that part of the sequestration, or is that just has that just disappeared into the national debt?
Right. You were much too optimistic about what the Iraq War cost. A lot of people think that it ultimately, in terms of taking care of the veterans who were wounded and providing lifetime care for people who have lost limbs, have brain damage, that the cost of the war is something more like in the neighborhood of $2 trillion over the course of decades. So it's a very large number when you take into account how many veterans will need to be cared for and the direct costs that we incurred during the very long war. So all of those costs have been folded now into the national debt. And that's why when we have these periodic arguments over should we raise the national debt ceiling and continue to pay our bills from the past, that's why the president always says, you know, unless you can invent a time machine and go back and undo some of the things that have been done over the years, we really don't have any choice but to pay those things. So I think pretty much most Americans would agree that we can't just suddenly say to the veterans, "Ooh, sorry you lost your legs there, but you're on your own. We can't help you." We're going to continue to fund veteran hospitals, continue to try to help people who have suffered serious harm because of being in the war. So there are lots of costs yet to come as those young men and women age. And, you know, that's just going to have to be part of future spending. And the already expended money for the Iraq War is just now part of the national debt that has to be carried.
Let's take another call. Martin in Albuquerque. Good morning, Martin. You're on the air.
Good morning. Yeah, I have a question. What is the effect of the sequester on Congress directly? I mean, do these members of Congress, does it affect any of their special privileges received as members of Congress, like their pay, their medical benefits?
That's a great
the
thing about being in Congress.
That we all have to deal with.
No, the great thing about being in Congress is this stuff doesn't bother you. This is not something that's going to affect their pay.
So. Although potentially affecting districts and
right.
elections in the future and that kind of thing.
Right. You know, depending on how it plays out in their district and what people at home see happening here, it could have an impact on their future career in Washington. So, I mean, I think they are taking it seriously. Certainly people are aware that this is a big issue. But it's not like they're going to take a 20% pay cut the way the veterans working for the Defense Department in civilian jobs are going to take.
Let's take another break, and we'll be right back with Marilyn Giewack. She is NPR's senior business editor, and we also have a few folks waiting on the line with their comments and questions. Stay tuned. This is the KUNM Call-In Show.
In anticipation of the sequester, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting held back 10% of their grants to public radio stations, just as KUNM is in need of some major new equipment. So you're being a real friend right now when you become a member or renew your membership, or send us an extra gift. The Santa Fe International Folk Art Market and Lobo Scooter donated great prizes to encourage you to help us out. Return the mailing you received or donate and register at KUNM.org. Thanks.
Understanding the concept of the fourth trimester is critical when it comes to helping parents cope with a crying baby.
The child from the first day they're still growing a tremendous number of brain cells every single day. 95% of brain development is by the age of six.
Hear from John McPhee of the New Mexico Department of Health as we discuss health and safety for pregnant women and young babies. Join us this Friday morning for Women's Health Today at 8 a.m. right here on KUNM.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I've been working to contextualize the sequester nationally and here in New Mexico with NPR senior business editor Marilyn Giewack. And I'd like to go right back to the phones to Ray in Santa Fe. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you very much. I'm a hot air balloon pilot, sport aviation. A couple of comments on the airport. One, I've often flown into airports without air traffic control. The big issue is how much traffic is there. Sort of like, do you try to park on the freeway in the middle of rush hour or park on a residential street? So not having air traffic control is not a big issue. The other point on the small airports is there is a tremendous amount of federal subsidy to small airports, primarily so a congressman or a senator can say, gee, we have a new terminal in Hobbs, and we're subsidizing each passenger that flies into Hobbs approximately, I don't know the exact figure, $5,000, because we're subsidizing the airline to fly in there. So I can say to my constituents, we have an airline into Hobbs. The other thing on terms of sequestration, I believe back in 2011, it was mentioned that the Speaker of the House campaigned very strongly to force the military to keep a second engine line going for the F-35 because that plant was in his district. That was a $400 million boondoggle that the military explicitly said they didn't want. So in terms of getting the budget deficit under control, everyone is going to have to take a little pain. The congressman from New Mexico giving up the subsidy for the small airports, and the Speaker of the House, his pet manufacturing program.
Thanks for your call, Ray. Marilyn, you had comments?
A lot of these issues, they're very complicated and tough in a lot of ways because the airport situation, yes, the caller is absolutely right. There are a lot of airports that really just don't get very much traffic. But if they didn't have an air traffic control tower, maybe they wouldn't get any traffic at all. And for local business people, that would really be painful. You might have, let's say, 4 flights a day that involve a regional jet coming in and providing transportation to a big hub city. So, you'd say, well, geez, that's only 4 flights. And is it worth having a control tower to direct these flights? On the other hand, if you take the control tower away, that airline might say, you know what, we're just going to skip that town. We're just not going to bother with it. It's not worth the risk. And so you lose your air service and those 4 flights a day that the business community depended on. So is that a huge economic hit? No, probably not. It's not going to change the national GDP. But there are lots of little cuts that really hurt small communities. For example, if you take away the rural post office, you take away their airport. Each one of those decisions doesn't matter all that much in the big scheme of things. But on the other hand, do you want to have a whole country full of people who just live in Manhattan? Or do you want people to sort of spread out around the country a little bit and maybe not all pile into the same cities? So there's questions about what's the best use of resources, and those are things that really people do need to sort out. Is this worth it or isn't it?
Let's take one last call this morning. Alexander in Santa Fe. Good morning. You're on the air. It looks like Alexander may have not been able to wait. Marilyn Gwax, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Maybe we can end this show on, I had said at the beginning of the show, maybe there's a light at the end of the tunnel. You were talking about the measures in Congress that would change the flexibility that agencies mm-hmm. have for implementing the cuts that the sequester requires. Can you give us some examples of what that flexibility might look like for certain agencies?
Well, as I said, you may decide, for example, that a project that is already underway shouldn't be cut. It should finish out with full funding because you've already put years of work into a research project, funding for medical things. I mean, some of those research projects can take years, or things that the military is working on they may have had in the pipeline for a long time. It would make more sense to finish things that are in the pipeline and just not start new projects. So those are the kinds of choices that mm-hmm. more flexibility would bring us a little bit more common sense to this whole process. But also the other good thing is that maybe it's just getting us all to focus more on just these kinds of discussions about what do we really want? Do we want rural towns to have airports and post offices? Or maybe we don't. Maybe actually in the 21st century it's time to move on from some of those things. But we need to be talking about it clearly, and this seems to have focused a lot of minds.
What can we expect to see from NPR reporters in coming weeks and months in their coverage of the sequester? Are there areas that you're going to focus on?
Oh, I'm sure that the upcoming battles in coming weeks will be. We have a lot of great reporters over on Capitol Hill that will be following all these developments. And then, of course, the business desk that I'm on. We're watching the economy very closely, and we'll continue to report on how this plays out. Where are we going to see the trims? What will get hurt? And how really is all of these big decisions that are being made in Capitol Hill, how do they play out in your lives around the country?
Great. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Marilyn Gwax is the NPR Senior Business Editor. And this has been the KUNM Call-In Show. If you missed part of the program, we will post the audio online in just a few minutes after the show is over. Engineering this morning was done by Marshall Broyles. We also had Michael Hess screening your calls this morning. Andy Lyman, our news intern, provided production assistance. And we'll be back next week, next Thursday morning at 8 for the KUNM Call-In Show here on KUNM. I'm Elaine Baumgartel.